to the Patty G Show, the 200th episode. I'm your host today, Kay Godan, also known as Katie G, and we're flipping the script today. You're going to find all about Patty G, everything you ever wanted to know. Patty G, are you ready?
I guess so. I don't know. I didn't know this was an expose of Patty G.
It absolutely is.
Well, I'm excited. You know, I'm just happy I've made it 200 episodes, and I'm excited you reached out and you're like, hey, I want to interview you.
I'm ready. I'm coming for you. I'm ready.
Well, let's have it. Let's
go. All right. So 200, I mean, that's a big deal.
It is.
So I want to start back at the very beginning.
Okay.
Let's talk about baby Patty. Let's talk about Rock-a-bye Patty.
Okay.
So when you were born.
Yeah.
Are you the first kid, the second kid? Where are you in the lineup of your siblings?
So I was born fourth of five in the lineup.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like the kid that isn't really thought about, you know.
Okay, so you're like in the hand-me-downs.
Oh, yeah. I was all hand-me-downs. Okay. All had my siblings' names on it. Like, that was me. I was
sure.
The kid just barely, you know, fitting into everything I owned and kind of growing into it as a kid. But, yeah, I was the fourth of five. I was the third boy. So I'm the baby boy, so I guess I've got some credibility as, you know, parents paid attention to me there.
Sure.
But then I have a younger sister who kind of came in and took the cake away from me.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah, fourth of five, third boy.
Okay, so hand-me-down, so that's why you get so excited about your McClavey outfits, because this is just all for you. This is tailored for you. This is just all about you.
100%. Look, it's the first time I've gotten new clothes.
Yes,
you know, so
I agree.
It's like McClavey, they're coming to me, they're not giving me hand-me-downs. You know, they're giving me stuff right off the rack, fitting it to me, making sure it all fits, and it's like I don't know what this is,
yes.
You know? Like, how do I wear unworn clothes?
Right.
It's all a new element for me.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so you're in this big pack of kids. You're one of five. And tell me what that was like growing up in a household full of kids. Did everybody have their own room? Did you have a bunk bed? You know, tell me the setup of, you know, the Grimion household.
So to understand the setup of the Grimion household, we got to back it up to when my parents bought the house before they had their first kid. They bought a five-bedroom, four-bathroom house on Lobdell back in the 80s for $100,000.
Wow.
So they bought it, and it was in deplorable condition. So they rebuilt it, revamped it all up, and totally renovated the entire thing over the course of our time there. My parents lived there for like 20 years. So we grew up, and my siblings are pretty well spaced out. My older sister is 9 years older than me, and then my younger sister is 4 years younger than me. So when I was growing up, I never really shared a bedroom up until I was maybe five or six. So I had my own room, and then my other two brothers, who were like 18, 20 months apart, they shared a room because they were so close.
Okay.
And then my sister had her own room. And then my little sister was the baby, so she had the biggest room,
of course, naturally. They had some Irish twins in the mix, and they kind of had to share everything because they were so close in age.
They were so close in age, size, everything.
Okay.
So they were sharing the bulk of clothes and rooms. And then when my older sister moved out, then all of us got our own room, and it was like life-changing.
Yes.
Because then we all had our own space, and my brothers were happy. They got their own rooms. They got to pick which room they wanted. And then I was actually given bunk beds in my room to accommodate for space. And I had a desk so I could do work, whatever I wanted to do at the desk. And so I was in a Jack and Jill bathroom with my brothers. So we shared bathrooms. But yeah, it was some fun times growing up on Lobdell. And then we ended up moving out to the country. And I finished out living there until I got married.
Okay, so your parents buying a big house like that when they're just getting married, they obviously had plans for a big family.
They had plans, but were so much advised not to do it. Like, my grandfather told my dad, if you buy this house, this is the dumbest thing you've ever done.
Nice.
Like, this is just...
And did that prove to be true? Do they think that now, or do they think they made the right decision?
Oh, no,
for
no.
All the kids and the house.
They were when my grandparents were still with us, they were very pleased that my parents bought the house because it was right down the street from them, and they were there every day. So they were very happy that they ended up buying it and sticking to the mission and all the renovations they'd done to it over the years. It turned out to be one of the better decisions that they'd made at that time. But still, as a newly married couple in like a 4,000 plus square foot house with not furniture in it,
right,
was nerve wracking, I'm sure. So it ended up being a great house. We loved that house every day we were there. And then they were just like, we're tired of city life. We want to move out to be in the country.
Okay.
So they ended up buying a plantation off River Road for 9.5 acres. So we had a big old farm.
And so were you and your siblings, were y'all excited about the move to the country? Or did you think, oh gosh, we really kind of like being in the thick of it right here in the middle of the city?
So we were still young enough that when we went to go see the house, we were able to explore everywhere. And the realtor my parents had, she was a family friend. She went there and walked in the house in the kitchen and like sat at the table and told the other realtor, you know, they're going to go look at the house. And so she just sat down because she knew we were going to just run off in every direction of sorts. And the realtor's trying to like follow us around. And my parents' friends, she's just like, just sit down. They're going to come back once they're done and tell you what they think. And so we actually loved how much space there was and how we could explore. Mm-hmm. There was a big barn on the property. There were trees on the property. We could climb in trees. We're already working out where we're going to put the chicken coop. And we were like, we're going to get this animal and this animal. So it was all so new and a total 180 of where we were used to that I think that level of excitement sparked in us like this, okay, we can move.
Awesome.
Like, we'll figure it out. We'll go. So it wasn't this, you know, pulling the teeth, like, why are we leaving the city?
Yeah.
It was more of, if we're leaving the city, we're leaving it right. And we're going to a much bigger place with land. And it was fun and exciting.
And so you're out there, you're in the country, and your mom decides to homeschool?
Well, so we were homeschooled before we moved out.
Okay.
So on Lobdell, I was starting to get homeschooled at fourth grade. My brother had graduated eighth. And so instead of sending him to Catholic High or any other high school around Baton Rouge, she decided to homeschool the rest of her kids. So she was homeschooling four of us on Lobdell. And it was interesting, to say the least, because
interested in this. What made her make this decision?
So at the time she was like, you know, I think I can educate my kids better than the school system can. And the jury's still out on if that's a reality, you know.
Yeah.
But she was like, I think I'm called to do this. I'm called to homeschool my kids and kind of teach them more than what they can learn in the classroom, where in the classroom they get X and then at home we got to focus on homework. So we want to give them more of a view on life in the real world that we should give them the opportunity to homeschool, which turned out being a positive thing because it allowed us to start a lawn care business and get really entrepreneurial from a very young age.
Yes.
Whereas if we were in your traditional school system, we would have extracurriculars. We would have so many other activities still at the school. We would be limited in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
At least I think that we wouldn't be able to have those opportunities. Now, my parents wanted us to still have extracurriculars and a social life, so we ended up joining a homeschool group here in Baton Rouge. There are like 300 plus families.
Okay, yeah, I've heard about this. Like, is it a co-op or what is it
so
called?
It's called Holy Family Homeschoolers, with the group we were involved with.
Okay.
It is a co-op and just a network of families. So the co-op operated where some parents had experience in certain subjects. So we had a veterinary parent who taught biology, and then we had a parent that had a very, very bright kid who taught high school grade physics. And so we would go to their houses and it'd be a group of like 10 or 12 kids and they would teach the subject. And it gave us a little bit of a classroom field.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we still had to do a biology lab. We still had to take the ACT exam. We were still bound by all the same guidelines typical students were, although we actually had to score higher on the ACT than your average school person because we were unsure of the education we were getting. And so their proof to get us into LSU was we had to have 2 points higher on the ACT. So it was a co-op in that sense, but it was more of a community where every Friday we would go to Highland Road Park and have park days, as we called it. They would schedule field trips. My mom started creating school dances. So I then took up DJing.
So obviously you get your energy from her. Obviously she had a lot of energy.
100%.
So you must pull that energy from her.
Imagine taxiing on a plane looking toward the end of the runway. It seems so far away, it's even hard to see it. And that's what the concept of retirement probably felt like when you were in your 20s, 30s, and 40s, way far in the distance, not visible or even a concern. But as you turn 50, something happens. Retirement suddenly seems like something real, something not too far away. In your 50s, you are rolling down the runway. Retirement is getting closer and closer, faster and faster, weeks and months zipping by. But are you even ready for a successful takeoff to retirement? Fear not, there's still runway left. But the time is now. Time to make progress and time to get a plan. The Runway Decade will help you get organized, get energized, and give you the direction you need to take off to your desired retirement. The Runway Decade, building a pre-retirement flight plan in your 50s.
So while your mom is rocking the house, starting school dance, what's your dad doing when all this is going on?
So my dad's a civil engineer by trade. He's a PE and he's a civil engineer, and he was working at the firm that designed and built the Leeville Bridge to Grand Isle.
Oh, wow.
So he was part of the LA1 project. That was his big final project at the firm before they ended up kind of consolidating. And then he worked at another firm for a few years as independent contractor. But my great-grandfather started Globe Plumbing. And my grandfather and his brother took it on, and it became Grimion Mechanical. Okay. And they started doing air conditioning and plumbing, and then they decided to separate. One, my great-uncle wanted to do air conditions, and my grandfather wanted to do plumbing. So they were running the family business out of what some people would call a mother-in-law suite at the house in Lobdell was the actual office for Grimion Mechanical. And we had like basically a lay-down yard and trucks all parked there. So my grandfather was running the plumbing business, but my dad was a PE and also a licensed plumber. Then he got his master's plumber and absorbed the Grimion Mechanical business. So he was an engineer and a master plumber.
Wow.
You know, running at both ends. And then Katrina hit, and they kind of just went full in at the time of the move to Grimion Mechanical. So he stopped, you know, being a traditional engineer and just starting running the family business from there. So it was... quite chaotic at our house.
And so is the family business in operation now?
Yes.
And do you have siblings that work in the family business?
Yes.
You do?
The family business was mostly residential with a little bit of commercial ties. Mm-hmm. Then they started getting more heavy on commercial. Then they started dabbling in industrial. So now, as of today, Grimion Mechanical does industrial plumbing and maintenance for plants all in the Gonzales, Geismar, and all across the Mississippi River area. And then my brother, Philip, runs that with my dad.
Okay.
And my other brother, who was an attorney by trade and degree, came back from doing the law thing for a couple years and now runs a new company they've created, which is an industrial maintenance company. So they just do, like, cutting grass. So he's the most well-educated grass cutter there is in the industrial space. So, yes, I've got two siblings running the family business, and then me as a CPA, I handle the tax side of both companies.
So you do work with them?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So you do. So you're on the payroll over there, and
not on the payroll. I send a tax bill, and that's how I get paid.
Okay, so that's how you get paid. So from your day job, in turn send them a bill, and that's how. And so, do they ever try to get you to leave your day job and say, "Hey, Patty, we need you on our side. We need your energy. We need your ideas. We need your spirit over here on Team Grimion." Are they on you for that?
I wouldn't say on me, because they are seeing what I'm doing now and are like, my mom always told me that you could do whatever you wanted to do. You're never limited. So she always instilled that, you know, kind of go-getter mentality in me at such a young, early age. She did it most in part because I'm like partially blind. So she didn't want me to be limited by my eyesight. And then it kind of turned into my reality of my life that I just go and do whatever I'm trying to accomplish. So they mentioned, like, you should just stay in the family business and run it. But at the time, there wasn't enough accounting and office work to provide full time for me where I could justify being like, hey, I want to make X. And so they were under the impression, like, you do the books and then you're in the field as well. I'm like, I have no drive to go out and do actual plumbing work.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm either in the office full time or I've got to go and work for an accounting firm and go that route. Because I wanted to do accounting because I knew if businesses understood their numbers, they can make better decisions. And those better decisions could in turn grow the company. So I was like, if I know the numbers, I can help consult these business owners get them to a point where they're comfortable with their business, they're making the right decisions, they have the information, then they can better execute on whatever it is they're in. And so I went the public accounting route, and from there, they're like, all right, now we need help still on our taxes, you know, and our miscellaneous knickknacks here and there. Mm-hmm. So I kind of helped them on an as-needed basis. With my mom being a CPA, in her past life, she was a CPA and worked for the state. So she was able to maintain the books for a while. And so now I'm just kind of helping them as they need it, not necessarily in the weeds of it. And they know it's like he's going to help us whenever
he can.
But they
would take you.
Oh, they would
take you. If you called and said, hey, you know what? This is not really working out. I'm all in. They take you with open arms.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna ask your dad when I see him if that's true or not, and I'll get back to you.
Yeah, he might
that.
Be like, Patrick, he's out.
He
wrote him off the will. He's done.
He's done. Okay, so you have this interest in numbers. You have an interest in entrepreneurs. So tell me how that came about. At what age did you say, I want to start a business?
11.
And what was that business?
So at the age of 11, my oldest brother was 16 and the other brother was 13 and I was 11. Or 14, it was 14. And so I was 11 and they wanted to do a lawn care business. So I was like, okay, that sounds like, you know, they were mostly bringing me along because my mom was like, no, if you're going to leave the house, you got to bring your brother with you so we don't have to watch any of you. So they kind of brought me along and I was the push mower, which is the easiest job. If you know lawn care, you know the push mowing is the easiest part of any yard.
That's what I do. At our house, I have push mower and get it done. I love it.
Yeah, so my job was push mowing and blowing. And they did the edging and the weed eating because that was more intricate and more finesse. They're like, no, little brother, you're just going to push.
Yes.
And so
Scott does that part. I do the push mower and he does the weeding.
Right. Yeah. So they put me in that role and I quickly realized that this is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the grass cutting part was rewarding.
Yeah.
But the ins and the outs of the business, like my parents helped us get an LLC going. They helped us get a bank account open and we were having to manage and pay bills and then we were getting paid. And so
what was the name of the business?
Oh, Cajun Cutters Lawn Care.
Cajun Cutters Lawn Care. Nice.
Oh, yes. Very Louisiana.
Yes.
Baton Rouge name. That was what my brother and my mom came up with.
And so how did you get clients? Did you call your family first and say, we've got Cajun Cutters going, can we come over, or pass out business cards? How did you get your clients?
So the first client was our parents because they loaned us the money to buy the lawnmower. And the terms of the loan was you have to keep our yard immaculate. Otherwise, we're going to withdraw the loan. We're going to call the loan, basically.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It was not, oh, you need so much money to buy your lawn equipment. Here's the money. They're like, all right, we're going to loan you the money.
Nice.
And you're going to keep our yard upkept in conditions of the loan.
That's
so
amazing.
We got our yard company. First yard was our track coach. My dad was like, hey, my boys are starting this lawn care business. I know you get your yard cut. Do you want them to come cut your yard? And so he was the hardest on us. He was like the Karen of yards, where he would sit out there and watch us in a lawn chair cutting his yard. He's like, no, you missed a spot.
Mm.
Nope, you this is not cut all the level. You got to level it off. Which was great for us because we were able to get a good picky client right out the gate and really learn how to be, you know, one with our craft and really care about the end product. And then we would go to church and talk to, like, my mom was a daily mass participant, so we would always altar serve. And so we were talking to people that were there at the church and like, do we cut grass? Who wants to cut yours? And then
That's
we started
awesome.
Cutting other family friends, and then we started flyers. So then we would go door to door with flyers, mailboxes, and so we started getting clients that way. And we did it for a while. We did it for probably 5 or 6 years. We cut grass. And so much so, we started studying to get our landscaping license. Then my brother went off to college, and the other one went off to college, and I was kind of left with it. So then I just started picking it up and doing it for probably 3 or 4 years as well, and kind of brought in a buddy of mine, and we were doing it together. And then that was at the time I started kind of opening and dabbling in some other businesses. So
what were some of the other businesses?
So the other businesses was a paracord bracelet necklace company where I would weave and braid paracord and sell bracelets to people. It was at the time it was hot. It was the thing
was
to do.
It?
And so then I would sell necklaces, dog collars. I would sell dog leashes, duck lanyards.
And how did you sell them?
Friends and Instagram.
Okay.
I would literally go to my friends who has a pet dog and be like, hey, you want a dog collar? And he's like, yeah, that looks cool. So then I would sell it to him, and then he'd have friends that he'd tell it about. So it was all very word of mouth. There was no, our marketing was just, hey, tell your friends that I sell this,
mm-hmm.
and selling it to my buddies. And that was kind of how we were, I was selling that particular company.
This episode is proudly presented by Gage. Gage is a local company here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. For over 40 years, Gage has provided businesses with the very best telecommunications, IT, and standby power services available. Gage has a variety of services, including Gage Cloud Voice. It is the last phone system your business will ever need. You need to give your business the ability to be accessible anytime, anywhere. And with Gage's cloud-based phone system, you'll be able to accomplish just that. Not only do they have Gage Cloud Voice, they have fully managed IT services that are proactive network monitoring, 24/7, 365, help desk, business contact. Continuity, they are there for you. What you're also going to need is some cybersecurity. Gage is there to safeguard your business from potential cyber threats, even when you aren't aware they exist. Gage also is power and leaders in standby generators. They are the number one Cummins dealer on the Gulf Coast and provide generators to homes and businesses of any size so you can keep life going. Gage, better connected, a proud sponsor of the Patty G Show.
Thank you so very much to Currency Bank, a proud sponsor of the Patty G Show. If you are looking for a business bank that fosters on three core values, relationships, service, and technology, Currency Bank is the place for you. They pride themselves on convenient, accessible, and secure online banking resources where you can manage your account balances, initiate transfers, enroll with e-statements, and more via their online portal. Between the relationships, the service, and the technology, they are going to be that partner with your business every step of the way, regardless of what you need. Currency Bank is the bank for business owners. Thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Lake Men's Health Center, with our Lady of the Lake Physicians Group. Guys, I know it's tough to get out and go to the doctor. I know it's challenging to find time in our busy days, but I promise you, signing up to be a part of this group with Dr. Curtis Chastain and Dr. Tyler Boudreau, you won't regret it for several reasons, but most of those being the fact of the time it saves, where you're able to get in on the same day, get that appointment done, and spend that time you need to talk with them about what your health goals and concerns are, as well as ensuring that the financial investments you have, you will be able to live out and see those come to fruition. So if you're an investing guy, you know all about and planning for the future and investing in the future. There's no other more important thing to invest in than your health. Make sure you go check them out, our Lady of the Lake Physicians Group Men's Health Center, and tell them Patty G sent you.
Okay, so you've got jewelry,
yep,
on the resume. You've got grass cutting. What else? And this is all before the age of 18.
Before the age of 18.
Before the age of 18.
So then my brother and I, we were asked to provide music to our high school dance. And so we were talking with some friends of ours that were in the DJ business. And they're like, you need X, Y, and Z equipment. So we said, okay, well, can we borrow yours? And we'll test our water with this one gig.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll DJ for the homeschool dance. And we'll see if we like this. And so we ended up liking it. And then we found out from them that a friend of theirs was getting out of the business. So he was selling all of his gear. So
awesome.
We then bought all of his gear. And then we started actually promoting and pushing that we were providing DJ services. So then we started DJing other dances. Then we'd start DJing weddings. Then we were starting to DJ debutante balls.
DJ and Patty.
Then we DJed for LSU Dance Marathon. And so, like, yeah, it was DJ. It was called P&P Audio because my
P&P
brother's name is Philip. P&P
Audio.
We get very creative with our names,
right,
of our businesses. So, yeah, P&P Audio was the company. But then we started a Facebook page, and that's when I started dabbling in social media marketing, where it was more than just word of mouth. We were actually DJing for people we had no idea who they were, and were enjoying all of that. And then we started upgrading our equipment, and then we started getting real technical with the audio and learning a whole lot just by trial and fire and YouTube. So we kind of got this business together and running, and then we started DJing tailgates for LSU, for LSU games.
Y'all were all over the place.
Oh, we were everywhere. Like
you're
it was nonstop at the time, and we carried that on well into. I want to say we stopped DJing when I got married.
Okay,
it's kind of when we let the DJ business fade and we sold the equipment.
I can imagine
was whenever
that
we got married.
DJing business is not really great for newlyweds when you're spending your weekends, nights somewhere else.
Yeah, my wife was not a fan of me having to go to weddings, you know,
all the time,
two or three times a month.
Right.
Because I had given her my weekends back in high school. I was bussing tables at Roberto's. So I was bussing tables and earning extra money that way. And she was like, you really got to stop bussing tables at some point because you're gone every Friday and Saturday night. So you're unavailable to do anything from the hours of 5 to 10:30.
So let's talk about your wife.
Okay.
Let's talk about that doll of a human. What a gal.
My amazing wife, yes.
What a gal. So when did you meet her? Did you meet her in high school, in college?
I met her junior year of high school.
Okay. And what did she, was she a guest of someone at the homeschool dance? Was she at church? How did you meet her?
So we met through a church type organization called Diocesan Youth Board, where we would put on events for kids in the diocese. So I was representing St. Gabriel Parish and she was representing St. Jude Parish. So we met for a flash mob that we were putting on for World Youth Day. They're like, hey guys, we're going to do a flash mob. We're going to bring a dance instructor. We need volunteers to be on this flash mob. So y'all need to come and like volunteer. So I showed up to a room of 30 girls and it was the only guy who volunteered for this flash mob. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, you know, a bunch of guys that want to do a flash mob dance.
You're right. Ready for anything.
I'm like, I'll try anything once,
yeah.
You know? So we go and she was pushed into the circle as the girl part, and naturally I was picked as the guy part. I was being the only guy. So I had known of her at the time, but we never really hung out. You know, I think I thought she was the quieter girl and I was the more loud, outspoken guy in high school. So I was like, nah, maybe she's not as cool or whatever. So then we got to know each other through that, and we just kind of hit it off and became really good friends.
You got to see how cool she really was.
Right. I got to see how cool she really was.
And then you needed a little cool to your heat.
I really did, though.
Yeah.
I needed somebody to tone me down a little bit.
Yeah.
I needed someone to say, you know, you've got all these crazy ideas. Half of them are garbage.
Right.
Right out the bat. You don't even need to investigate them anymore.
And so did your parents tell you your ideas were garbage, or were they just, they were encouraging you because they just wanted you to be the best that you could be?
They wanted me to figure it out.
They did.
They were like, you go, you want to make paracord bracelets and sell them? You do that. What do you need from us?
Yeah.
What do you need? I'm like, I just need your Amazon account to buy the paracord and the buckles. And I need to use the computer to look up YouTube videos on how to do this. So they were very much just, whatever you want to do. You want to do paracording. You want to do, you know, DJing. Whatever you have your mind set to, just do it. So long as it doesn't impact you helping around the house. You know, we still need some help. It's still, we have to run this farm, so we still need some help here at the house. So don't go and totally just wipe out yourself from the face of the family. So they were very encouraging with every business endeavor. There was never a, well, you might want to think that one over, Patrick. That's not really the best idea. Mm-hmm. They gave me quite a few puzzled looks. They're like, you really want to do that? Like when I decided to do seafood wholesaling, and I was gonna sell shrimp from Chauvin, Louisiana, to the East Coast was my plan. I was gonna buy shrimp off the dock from a local fisherman, and I was gonna sell it on the East Coast. And that was my like big ticket. I was like, this is it. I'm going to sell seafood wholesale.
I mean, everybody needs shrimp. I mean,
exactly my point.
I'm looking for shrimp. I mean, all the time.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm like, the local market's too tapped and it's too flooded with local vendors. I'm like, I got to go to the East Coast. They think they know shrimp. They don't know shrimp.
They don't know it. Mm-mm.
So I would cold call random businesses and markets on the East Coast during like my lunch hour in college. So I'm trying to build this seafood business, which called it Off the Pier.
Off the Pier.
Off the Pier Seafood was the company.
Okay. And what pier were you buying these shrimp from?
Out in Chauvin, Louisiana. They had a shrimper that I connected with who was willing to give it the old college try with me.
He was going to believe in me.
He was also looking for an exit. So I called him at the right time. He was like, I'm getting older. My kids aren't taking over the business. He's like, you know, if you, I'll start selling to you. And if you want this to work and you want to buy me out, I can sell to you one day. I'm like, you're selling this to like an 18-year-old. Okay. Yeah.
You really want it out.
You know, I just happened to stumble upon the right time, right place, right time. But I went through all this. I got my wholesale license. I got my resale certificate. I got my vendor license to transport seafood. I went through the whole process. And then I made my first sale. And somebody wanted, I want to say, 1,000 pounds of shrimp.
Wow.
So my plan was to float the cash with payment terms. And the guy in Chauvin was like, no, here we deal in cash. You need to pay me for the seafood that you're going to sell.
Sure.
And like, I wasn't worried about, the margins were great, but I didn't have enough cash to buy that first round. And so I'm like, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, again, I'm 18, 19. I don't have like, you know, $6,000, $7,000 lying around in liquid cash to go and buy the shrimp.
Right.
So I then figured out that I needed to find a way to raise capital. So I pivoted and turned the seafood business into a lifestyle brand and dropped the seafood from the name. So renamed the company and I started selling t-shirts. So then I'm coming up with designs of t-shirts. I'm going to trade shows. My lovely wife, my girlfriend at the time, was coming with me to these trade shows. We've got booths. I've got shirts. I then started making little handcrafted wooden Louisianas. I was selling those. I made a Piro somebody wanted to buy out of wood. So I'm just like selling all this merchandise at trade shows. And it got to the point where I'm like, all right, we have to go to the next level and really take it out there to retail shops. And to keep going to the trade shows, they were in the early part of the year, which I'm still pursuing this accounting thing. And so I'm working in an accounting firm. And they're like, all right, we need you to come in on Saturdays for tax season. Mm. I'm like, well, that's trade show time. Like, I can't come in on this. So I had to make a decision at the time. Do I want to continue pursuing this t-shirt thing? Or do I want to go into the accounting field and really pursue that? Which ultimately, the accounting thing was like my passion. And the t-shirt business was more of just a way to make money. And when those two collided, I was like, I'm going with the passion over the way to make money. And so I ended up closing down the t-shirt business, donated all the t-shirts that I had left over to Swole Fest out in Gonzales.
Oh, yeah.
And so I flooded them with like several hundred t-shirts.
It's in Grand Isle too.
I'm sorry, in Grand Isle, yes.
Is that
yes.
the same one? Yeah, yeah, what a great organization.
Yeah,
what a
phenomenal great event. Organization. So yeah, that was the closing of Off the Pier.
And you were just all in.
So then I was all into accounting, yeah.
I mean, you're probably the most excited person about accounting that has ever existed in the history of the world.
Yeah. I'm an anomaly in the industry. You don't have a lot of people very vocal about accounting and how excited they are for it.
That are leading the flash dance and the accounting firm.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not your average CPA. You know,
that's a whole business right there. Not right. Your average CPAs.
Yeah.
Here you come.
Yeah. So maybe I should probably coin that business name and purchase the naming rights.
Right. Might as well.
Yeah. So that was, I went to LSU with the intent to graduate in 3.5 years with an accounting degree and then go get my master's of accountancy and sit for the CPA exam.
And so how was the transition from homeschool Patty to college Patty?
I was still a weird one. I was still an oddball because at the time I had a 94 Jeep YJ that was lifted, countrified, and I had a squirrel tail on my CB antenna. So my vehicle stood out in the parking lot, to say the least. And I loved going to LSU because it was the first time I felt like I was really taught something by a genuine professor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in every class. I was eating it up.
Oh, yeah.
I was making friends with the professors. I'm still in contact with some of them today. Yeah. And I loved just the atmosphere of the classroom.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't go to LSU as the typical student. I think over the course of my college career, I went to Tigerland twice.
Mm-hmm.
over the course of all 4 years I was there. So I was not partying because I got to build a seafood business. I got to build
a
wholesale business. There's no time.
Here.
That's right.
I mean, there's no time for that.
I spent my time at like a friend of mine's apartments drawing logo designs and coming up with concepts and sketches for the t-shirts. So like that's what I was spending my time doing at LSU. I wasn't out partying and doing those typical
college
things.
And so did you live in the dorm in an apartment? Did you...
So I lived at home.
You lived at home?
Up until I got married.
Oh, wow.
So I commuted. It was about a 20-minute drive every day. I would commute to LSU. Mm-hmm. But I had 7:30 classes, and I would get to campus for like 6:45. So I had no traffic any way that I was going. And I loved the drive. So I would like some days take River Road, just cruising in my old little Jeep, driving down the road, or just...
Kind of clear your head and kind of wake up. I grew up in Plaquemine and I went to high school in Baton Rouge. And so I had that same, you know, a 20-minute drive in the morning. And it gave me time to think and wake up in the morning. And then for the ride home to kind of decompress and think about what I had to do. So I know that 20-minute drive that you're talking about.
Oh yeah, it was a fun little ride by myself just to gather my thoughts, reflect, think, and plan out what I wanted to do either that day, that week, or that year, and really get my mind right before showing up to campus. And when everything was like, all right, class, running here and there all over the campus. So it was a nice time that like I don't get anymore. Because, I mean, I work 2.5 minutes from where I live, so the drive time's a lot shorter.
Mm-hmm. And so your wife, who's your girlfriend at the time, what is she studying in college?
So my wife, she's the brains of the family. So she's a civil engineer. She's a PE civil engineer and still is practicing to this day. So at the time, she was like, you and this entrepreneurship things that you've got going on, because I was minor in entrepreneurship at LSU, and then I switched it into a major, which we can get into. So she was like, you've got all this stuff that you do. Mm-hmm. You have a seafood business, you DJ, you work for your parents, you work for this accounting firm, and then you throw hay in the afternoons to make even a little bit more extra cash. Like, you're just all over the place. I'm just going to study my civil engineering and go this route.
Dialing you down when I...
Oh, yeah.
Feel like you need to.
Yeah, I think after the fourth or fifth inventory count that she was with me when we were counting like 1,000 shirts, she was like, "When are you gonna wind this down? Like this is a bit much. Like this is too much for you and I to handle. Like I don't want to. I love you and all, but I don't want to keep doing this whole t-shirt thing. Inventory is a nightmare, and I don't ever recommend anybody getting into t-shirt brands that you're going to control the inventory. It is miserable.
I'm sure it is. So then you decide, the two of you, you want to get married.
Yeah.
And so how old are the two of you at that time?
So we got engaged right after I turned 21.
Wow.
Yeah, we got engaged young. So I turned 21 and proposed to her before she was 21.
And her parents, your parents, they're all in support of this because you've dated for so long and everybody's just so happy about this young, precious love that's ready to move on.
We had been dating for, at the time, like 3 years, I think it was. And my parents got married when they were 20, so they were like not at all concerned about the age. Again, my parents were never, you sure you want to do this? They were just like, if you've got your mind set on it, we're here to support you. And her family, I mean, when I asked her dad was like, well, yeah, I mean, I just consider you as a son already.
So this is
a formality.
That's
it sounds
so
good.
Sweet.
He's like, that works for me.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, we got engaged at pretty young. That was a whole story in and of itself because I didn't just do the typical down on one knee thing. I sent her on a scavenger hunt around Baton Rouge to places that had memories with us. So, like, I sent her with her mom and her sister to get her nails done, and then she came back home and I had a letter because, like, we were big like letter exchangers in high school and all that.
I love that.
So
I write a lot of letters too. I love getting letters, and I have boxes of letters that people have sent me. I love.
Oh, yeah.
There's something about a handwritten note. I've always encouraged people to send the note.
My handwriting's still garbage.
Hmm.
Oh, after all these years of handwriting notes, And so I sent her on a scavenger hunt to different areas, and I had friends come and like take her to these places in a car, like with GoPros, like we filmed the whole thing. Now, so even at the time, there was no podcast thoughts, but I was like, I want to film this and document this. So like I had a friend of mine who was into cinematography. He was filming parts. Then I had my sister taking photos in the bushes. So she went to like St. Jude. She then went to the Catholic Life Center.
Now,
she had no idea.
Photographed or videoed.
She knew it was filmed. Yes, she did know that.
She
signed a consent form before we started. She signed a waiver and all that stuff.
So she knew what was going on, what was going to be the end result of this.
No.
She didn't.
No.
She didn't know it was
a proposal.
Because you've got so many ideas and they're always all over the place and random. So who knows what you could be up to. So she wasn't clued in that this was the day.
Correct. Because in the calendar, I told her at, I don't know what anniversary it was. It was our 4-year anniversary. I was going to propose. And so like it was in the calendar, like proposal day, pop the question day. So she was thinking it was going to come later. She wasn't ready for it to, like, I caught her on the surprise by the timing of when I did it. So she didn't know it was happening. She caught on at, like, the second or third letter. She was like, okay, this is not just a fun little thing.
Mm-hmm.
So she was driven around town. She had a couple of stops. And then the last stop was a part on the levee where, like, we would drive and go down on the bachelor side and watch the sunsets while we were in college and all that. So I had gotten a push mower and cut a section of the levee she could walk down and cut grass. And I didn't cut the front side because I didn't want to be obvious. So I had a buddy of mine there for the final piece. It was 6 stops because she got a rose at every stop. And then the final stop, I was holding the last 6 to complete the dozen.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had 6 letters. And a friend of mine had some boots that he gave her so she could walk in the tall grass with boots. And then on the backside, she had nice shoes because I knew she was going to be wanting to be in nice shoes for the pictures. So she then walked on the other side, and I was there with the other flowers, and I had some tiki torches with photos set up from childhood photos from each of us on either side all the way to a slideshow of the two of us. So it was like our lives coming together type deal. Then I had candles all the way around. I had a tent set up with these canvas blankets on the ground so she wouldn't be standing in the freshly cut grass. And I timed it perfectly with the sun and the setting. And then she ended up saying yes. Spoiler.
Well, good thing after all that.
So then, yeah, we went back and partied and got married a year later.
I can't wait to see the video of this.
It's on her Facebook page.
Okay,
you can find it.
I'm going to have
to find
it. If
you're friends with her,
I don't know if Facebook
took it down because of copyright issues with the song, but I'll send you
amazing.
Some links.
Please. I would love to see this. That is absolutely amazing.
Oh, yeah. And like my buddy who did the editing, he got some B-roll footage. So it's like cutting to her and then it's cutting to me just standing there holding the flowers.
Oh,
and then it's not some of the finest cinematography work,
mm-hmm.
but for a bunch of young mm-hmm. college kids, it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's
that
pretty good.
Is incredible. My husband and I also got engaged on the levee. However, there was not any of that at all. So, wow, that's something. But I said yes, so yeah.
You said yes, she said yes. So you know what? At the end of the day, the question's just
right.
the same.
You got the answer.
The
answer's
still the same.
You still got the same answer.
Yeah.
So
then we got married a week after she graduated from LSU.
Okay, from LSU. And then after you tie the knot, where are you working at the time?
So at the time, I am working at Daggerpont & Bryan still, so the same firm that I'm at. I've been with them since an intern. So I started with them as an intern and was a true intern. Like, I was the only male, and so I was moving furniture around the office for them. I would do the yard work with the flower beds. I would trim the hedges down the driveway, and then a little accounting was sprinkled in.
And how did you find Daggerpont & Bryan for your internship? How did this come to be?
I honestly don't remember how I ended up applying. All I know is I've gone back and tried to find this answer, and I found an email exchange that apparently I submitted a Handshake application to them. So Handshake is the tool for that LSU has set up to send out resumes to businesses and they can post job ads for students. So it's an exchange of students to businesses for employment. So I sent them apparently an application on Handshake and interviewed with them, and they liked me, I guess, enough to hire me as an intern, and I've just been there ever since.
And so how many years now
Seven.
Have you been there?
7 years.
I think that's a huge testament, really, that you've been there for 7 years, that it obviously is, at the end of the day, your true passion because of how you've jumped around and done so many different things. For you to be in one seat for that long is a miracle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's remarkable.
It is. It's it has been a fun ride.
That's so awesome.
And I think the everyday up and downs, different stuff that I do keeps me engaged, because it is different stuff every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm never, as a CPA, touching the same thing, doing the same thing every single day. It's a variety of things. Now, it initially was pretty routine,
mm-hmm.
but I've gotten to the point in my career now where it is just, I'm more of a firefighter of the finances,
mm-hmm.
where I'm just like putting out fires all day, and now I'm managing a team of people that are providing the services and doing the work, and so now I'm really more client-facing than work-facing, and trying to interact with them and fulfill what they're after and what we're trying to accomplish for them.
And so now you're able to have that dream of giving the advice, looking at the numbers, helping businesses and people succeed.
Oh, yeah. I was right.
You were right.
I was right. It is. It's. I'm seeing the thoughts I had at the beginning of my college career of, numbers are important. Business mm-hmm. owners need to know them
mm-hmm.
to the point where they can make an educated decision on how they want to transact business. And every single day I'm seeing that come more and more a reality, where how much business owners rely on their CPA relationship to make a business decision, to make sure that the numbers are going to work, make sure the math
mm-hmm.
works. And so me being able to do that, provide that level of service where I'm doing the numbers for them and I'm making them feel safe and comfortable with their decisions mm-hmm. It's a blast.
That's awesome. So when did you start the Patty G Show? Obviously 200 episodes ago, but what year, at what point in your life did you say, okay, from when you were little, did you say, I want to have a show, I want to have a talk show? When did you have that dream, and then when did it finally come to be?
So I never really grew up with this dream to have a talk show of sorts. I did speech and debate in high school. And I competed regionally and nationally and got okay at it. I won a couple tournaments, and we were able to develop a skill of speaking and a skill of communications where I'm like, this is really fun. Mm-hmm. I enjoy this talking, this you know, Q&A back and forth, this debate style of engagement. I enjoy this. And then we did speaking on top of it, so we did different types of speeches. And when I got to LSU, I started on the speech and debate team at LSU, and then realized that at the collegiate level and the high school level, it's two mm-hmm. different atmospheres.
Mm-hmm.
And the collegiate level atmosphere was just not what I was after.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I was really able to get behind and pursue, so I kind of dropped off from there. But when I was at LSU, and I'm getting my minor in entrepreneurship, and then the entrepreneurship department comes to me and says, we want you to convert and get a major in entrepreneurship. And I'm like, I've got a major in accounting. And they say, well, you can get a paired degree. So they said, we're still developing the program and the curriculum and the bachelor, so you're going to be the first one. So I was the first one to officially graduate with a bachelor's of science from LSU with an entrepreneurship degree. I've got two degrees, accounting and entrepreneurship. And when I was in the classes, everybody kept telling me, we can't wait to leave Baton Rouge. We can't wait to leave Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
There's no opportunity. There's no cool businesses. Nobody's doing anything here. It's just it's a dud of a town.
Mm-hmm.
And I wholeheartedly disagreed with them, because mm-hmm. while they were partying, again, I'm engaging with the professors. I'm engaging with the guest lecturers. The business owners are coming to talk to our entrepreneurship classes. I'm getting as much involved in the community as I can rather than partying. And I'm like, there's so much opportunity here. And so this was in late 18, so I was kind of just exploring what I could do, and podcasting was just starting to come on the scene as a mainstream form of content. And I started doing research into podcasting, started listening to them, and started figuring out, what is this exactly? And I always thought of it from a marketing perspective. I'm like, well, every business needs to have one of these. It's this dedicated platform that you can say whatever you want. You're not mm-hmm. regulated. You can talk about any topic under the sun. Every business needs to have this to pursue their business agenda. They need to talk about it. They need to post this stuff. This is phenomenal. So I pitched it to my parents, and my dad was like, no one's going to listen to us talk about toilets. We're out. I pitched it to the accounting firm, and they're like, that's giving away our advice for free. We're out. And I'm like, okay, that's great. I got two no's. Nobody's going to do this, but it still kept harping on me. I'm like, I want to do a podcast. I want to continue conversations that I'm having outside of the classroom with people. I want to record it and publish it. So then I thought of, well, I'm having conversations with people. They're business owners. We're collaborating. I'm helping some students get some businesses off the ground. We're having really cool conversations. Why don't I just start documenting this stuff and not really create a podcast around like the office or food or any given topic? I'm like, why don't I just document my conversations with people and make that into a podcast? More importantly, why don't I do this with Baton Rouge business owners, and then I can start promoting and really getting the word out there of what we have to offer here in the area, in the community, in the state, from what I know and experience that everybody should know, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I need to do this. I started researching how to create a podcast. I then started researching what gear would be good. And at the time I was like, I know video is going to be huge. I need a video element, but I don't know video. I know audio from my DJing days. I know I can whip up and record stuff. I'm good at that. I know the technology there, but I don't know video. I'm like, well, let me just do an iPhone. Just start with that. So I came home from work one day, and I beat my wife home, and I'm sitting there with my phone, and I'm like pressing record and facing me with the camera, and I'm like trying to say something that's coherent. And I was just very uncomfortable. I was like, I can't film myself. I'm not cool with this at all. So I went inside, sat in my office, and I'm like, okay, Patrick, she's going to be home in like 15, 20 minutes, now or never. You need to just don't do video. Just press record and just put out your ethos of what you want this show to be and just start. You just got to push record and get going, get the first episode under your belt. And so that's what I did. The first episode's about 7.5, 8 minutes long, and it's just me rambling what I want to do with the show and what I envision doing with the show. And for the best of my knowledge, I think I'm still pretty on point. I think awesome. I'm still pretty on par for the course of what I hoped it to be at the time I started. And then the second episode was a friend of mine who was just getting started in his company. And I said, hey, I'm doing a podcast. I want you to be on the show. And he was like, okay, sure. Whatever, Patrick. I'll come and sit on where we. I'm like, on my kitchen table, like on with my iPhone, my press record and voice memos. Super simple, nothing high tech or fancy.
Welcome to the brand new Philia mobile app. We took all the same tech that's helped hundreds of people sell their homes themselves and packed it into an easy-to-use app for your phone. When you download the Philia mobile app on either the Apple or Android App Store, you'll immediately be able to see the power of this game-changing tool. From the seller's dashboard, you can navigate to all the information that you need. We intentionally separated everything into key groups, such as tasks to be completed, buyer leads for your listing, and contact information for everyone involved through closing. When you get an offer on your property, you can simply review and respond all within the app. No matter where you are in the world, you'll be able to monitor everything that's going on with your property from listed to sold. It's truly the power of Philia in the palm of your hand. Download the app and see for yourself. Philia, it's real estate reimagined.
Because I knew from debate, there were two styles. It was teen and single. I'm like, I need somebody to bounce off with. I'm not good by myself. I'll own it. I accept it. I'm not good just doing a solo run podcast. I've got to have interaction with somebody. I'm a people person. And so I'm like, I need a guest. So then I asked him to come on the show. He was the first guest. And we sat there for like 40 minutes just talking about entrepreneurship, college, what he envisioned, and I think it was pretty awful. I'm not going to lie. I think the first episode was pretty awful. And so then I was like, I need to get better at this. I need to work this muscle that I don't have. So then I talked to somebody else who was kind of helping me get it, you know, fully thought out and processed. And he said, why don't you start writing down questions? You don't have to look at them. You don't have to read them, but just write them down so you know you have something to fall on. If you get to the point where you're sitting there and you're like, okay, where do we go? What do we say? So I did. I wrote down like 30 questions. And for the second episode, I got my friend to film it. And we took photos. And I convinced Charlotte to give me $100 so I could buy gear. Like, I need gear. I need a microphone. I need an amp. I need something. She's like, you get $100. That's it. We're a broke newlywed family. You get $100. That's it. I'm like, deal. So I did. I bought, spent $100 and bought two mics and a mixer. And she's like, this is just another hobby. This is just another thing that's going to be a phase. It's going to blow over. It's not going to turn into anything. I'm not letting you spend a bunch of our money and go and buy thousands of dollars of gear. So you get $100. So I did. And so the first episode till probably the 30th episode was with the same gear. I was using her MacBook Pro. We were recording into Audacity. And I was going the mics into a mixer, into the computer. So it was a computer and mixer setup. Then I convinced her to let me get a little stand so I could use my iPhone. And then I bought a little fluffball microphone so I could stream to Facebook because I finally got comfortable. I'm like, all right, now we can film. And I want to say Jada Cody's episode may have been the first one that we shot on film. And it is he and I on my screen porch. Significantly poor lighting because I had my screen porch had one light, one can light. And so it looks like we're at a camp. But it was such a fun time. We had a bottle of wine and we just chatted about Jada Cody, who at the time I was like, I've got somebody who's got a name.
Cool. People are going to watch this. Like,
people are going to watch this. They're going to listen to Jay's episode. This is going to be awesome. I love this. And so, yeah, it was from there. I was just like, all right, I'm live streaming every episode from here on out. We're going to be live streaming on Facebook with my iPhone. And we just went to town. And then we had a producer buddy that I met by being on someone else's podcast. He produced that show. And I was like, you want to come produce mine, maybe? There's no money in any of this. Just very first, I want to be upfront. There's no money here. We're making zero. I'm funding all this out of my own pocket. By the gracious approval of my wife, I'm paying for all of this. So he was like, we'll give it a go. We'll try it out. And then I ended up going at a much quicker pace than he wanted from a recording standpoint. And he was like, look, you need to pay me way more than what you're paying me now. Like my time, the time that I'm committing. And I'm like, I understand. I get it. I don't have that money. Like, I just can't afford you. Like, we're just going to have to separate and go our own ways. And so he was like, okay, you know, whatever. That's fine. So then I bought some other gear that would make my life a little easier to record. So I ended up buying like a little Mevo single camera that could live stream that I could control from my iPad. And then I bought some Rode mics that were wireless so I could plug into the Mevo camera that I would be like, all right, done. I've got two mics and a camera. I'm like, I've got my podcast now. I'm recording to an SD card. I'm going to upload it. I'm going to edit an iMovie, which was a free software. And I put it on anchor.fm, which was a free platform. I'm like low bucking everything, every step of the way. Like just as frugal and as cheap as I can, I'm putting this podcast on.
You're just making it happen.
I'm making it happen.
You're just making it happen. So at what point did you say, I need sponsors. I've got enough viewers. I've got enough listeners to where somebody may want to advertise their business with me. Who was your first sponsor?
So it was in 2020, right when COVID had hit. And we decided that, or it might have been 20, no, it was 21 actually. It was 21. I was like, it's 2021. I've got some numbers. Like I've got a good track record. That was back when the Facebook algorithm was still nice. And so I was getting good views. Excuse me, on my Facebook Live. So I'm like, oh, I can use my Facebook Live numbers in conjunction with my downloads. I'm like, I've got some numbers. I've got stats.
Yeah,
I can go to a sponsor.
Stats, right. I can
got stats.
Show you this is what's going on.
Right. So it was, I think it was 21, where I was friends with the owners of Uncle Earl's, and they were closed due to COVID. And I was like, I need a space because now my wife's like, all right, you've gotten quite a few people to come to our house, Patrick. I don't want them at the house anymore. Like, clearly this is not going away.
Do you have a baby at this point?
No baby yet. No
kids. She was just like, this is not going to work. And
right.
Obviously, especially when you would finally have kids, then it really was not going to work.
Correct. She was like, you know, we've got random people in our house.
Yeah.
I'm having it kept our house clean, which was nice.
I know that's
like
nice.
The house was always clean.
I would never get my house clean. I'd never get my projects done if I didn't have parties.
Exactly. So the house is always clean. So that was a nice element, but it was still, she's like, random people are coming. you know, beforehand they were friends and you knew them, I knew them. Mm-hmm. Now we're getting friends of friends, and now you're having total random people show up to our house that I don't know.
Smart gal.
She's like, you got to find some place to record. Like, finish out the year here, but in 2021, like, you got to find a place to record. So then I reached out to Jordan and Uncle Earl's. I was like, hey, man, you're closed. You're not doing anything, but you're still keeping the lights on. Can I use your space and record episodes? And he was like, all right, sure. Not a problem. Just put the Earl's logo in the background, and that's fine. Drink whatever you want in the bar. Like, it's going to go bad because we can't open because it's COVID.
Oh, boy.
So he's like, I'm not going to throw
the
it out.
Thickens.
Right. He's like, I'm not going to throw out any of the
alcohol.
Just
come to my business and drink all my booze and, what's like, and record it.
Yeah, he's like, let me know.
No, surely nothing could go wrong.
He's like, let me know what you consume so we can keep track of everything. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, dude, I'll pay you for what we, like, we're not going there and pouring, you know, Dom Pion or whatever. Right. I'm like, we're having Ultra. Like, yeah. Like, we're not going crazy, man. So he's like, yeah, just let me know how many you drink, and I'll, like, we'll account for it, and if you need to pay, you pay. I'm like, not a big deal. It's easy. If all I have to do is pay for beer to record at that location,
I'm in.
Yeah. So then we recorded all at Earl's for all of 21, and I talked to a friend of mine who we went to school together, and of school together. We were homeschooled together. We were in the same speech and debate club, and he had a production company. So he was like, I was like, have you ever done podcasts? He goes, we've never done podcasts. We'll learn how to do podcasts, and we'll just figure out the pricing as we go. Like, it's all new for us. It's new for you. Like, we'll just come and do it. And so at Earl's, we had them filming and producing the show. And I was, again, my gracious, loving wife was like, I'll give you 2 months. So I got a bigger budget now.
Nice.
It's like, I'll give you 2 months of paying out of pocket for the show production, but after 2 months, that's it. She's like, the Grimion well will run dry. So you got to figure out how to fund this thing. So I'm like, okay, got it. So that's when I was like, I need sponsors. I need a way to pay for this. So they graciously gave me 90-day terms on their invoices. So I think the first sponsor was either Falaya Real Estate, who's still a sponsor today, or Alvarez Construction. And then we had Triton Stone as an early sponsor as well. So they just did a quarter, and they really did it just to help me out.
That's nice.
They were like, Patty, we love what you're doing. We're just going to help you out. Like, we'll do 3 months. Sure. What's your pricing? And I'm like, I think this is a fair rate. They're like, sure. Well, that sounds good. We're giving you 3 months. Because again, I got numbers, but my numbers were like $40 to $50 CPM. So like not great for what I was trying to charge at the time. And so like they were like, we'll support you. So I was like, great. I bought myself more time. Cause like Charlotte gave me this budget and she goes, here's your budget. I'm like, now I got some spot. I'm like, I've expanded from 2 months. Mm-hmm. Now I got 6 months runway. Like, this is great. So then from there, I just dove heavy into I need sponsors. And so it just never stopped.
Yeah.
And I kept pushing. And then at the end of 21, didn't get enough sponsors. And so I had to part ways with my buddy's production company. I was like, look, I'll pay you what I owe you in full. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to say I'm not going to pay you, but the show did not get to the point where I thought it was. Mm-hmm. Number one. I didn't get enough sponsors, number one. Number two, I'm having a kid. So, like,
we
had our firstborn. So, like, I could float you personally. Like, I could keep going personally and pay for the show. But now I've got, you know, a kid coming. I can't support another mouth and the show. So, at 21, I had no guests scheduled for 22. Going into, like, December of 21, I had no guests scheduled. I had no episodes on the books. Like, I had nothing. The show was, for all intents and purposes, almost going to fade out and disappear. I had just finished episode 100. And so I was like, 100 episodes. Like, here we are. It's been a fun run. And I told him, like, I had an email typed up. That's still in my draft because I never sent it. It was like, look, y'all, we're closing the show. We're done. We're not going to continue anymore. And then it was in 22, Barrett Blondo of Falaya. He was like, hey, Patty, you need to come see something that I've been working on. So I'm like, okay. So I go and he goes, I built a podcast studio. Because I had been, we became real good friends, hit it off when he came on the show. And I was like, dude, you need a podcast for your company. It would help you out so much. I'm still pitching this podcast marketing for every business that I encounter. So he's like, okay, I'll build a podcast studio for me. And so he built it and he was like, hey, this is pretty cool. And so like he built it in. And so he made the Fly Focus studio, the studio we're still in at the moment. And he was like, come check it out. And I came and looked at him like, this is legit, man. Like, this
so
is
nice.
A sweet space.
It's great.
And so, yeah, we filmed your show there.
Yeah.
And so he was like, yeah, man, like we're going to use it to shoot episodes and whatnot. You know, he's like, if you ever needed to use it, you're like, sure. Like we could maybe work something out. And I was like, serious? I was like, okay. I was like, because I didn't have the gear. Like, I didn't want to take a step backwards from a quality standpoint and go back to my old gear.
Right.
Because it was like a one camera angle shot. Whereas in 21, the production company, it was like Hollywood level quality. And so I'm like, I don't want to take a step backwards from a quality standpoint of the show. And so he said, yeah, we'll figure something out. So I helped him get the fine tuning of the studio figured out. I was their guinea pig. We did a test episode. They're like, okay, this is not bad. I've got a guy who works here all day. Just come when he's here and he'll produce the show for you. Then you get the MP4 file. We'll take some photos and then you just post it and do whatever you want. So I said, this is going to work out.
This is
so
the answer.
So I went back and I was like,
this is the
babe,
answer.
The show lives. Like the show must
go on. Yes.
And so we were reached out to our guest, and I think it was Homes Building Material reached out. They're like, hey, we've heard of the Patty G Show. We want to come on. I'm like, snap. I'm like, somehow people have heard of the show. Like, now they want to come on.
Now,
I'm like,
now, all right. Who are these people?
I'm like, who are these people and why do they want to come on the show? I'm like, all right, now we have to continue. I'm like, the show's got to continue pressing on. So in 22, I worked out a deal with Falaya where they were a sponsor of the show. And now I'm like, my costs are covered.
Yeah.
I'm like, we did a barter exchange. I'm like, we're good. The show can continue to report. And
right.
So we ran through all of 22 and then I started grabbing a few more sponsors. And so as I'm starting to grab more sponsors in 22, I'm like, okay, this thing is, we're running and gunning. Like now I can start paying back Charlotte a little bit from this, you know, spousal loan that she's giving me. So sure enough, the show in 22 was like, we're profitable. Like this show made money this year. This is absolutely incredible that we can actually fund it. We're building 5, by the way, y'all. So this is a little train in the background. We'll let it keep going. Okay. So she's like, now she's happy. Now she's like, okay, you can keep doing this little show thing. You can keep this no longer hobby going if you want. It's like, great. So then finished out in 22 and I'm like, all right, 23, I need to hit it hard. I need to revamp. I need to do something else. And like, I don't have time to do all this work anymore. So then I started hiring a marketing firm. And so in coming 23, a marketing firm stepped in, JCW Creative came in and they started helping with the marketing for the first 3 months. And then we figured out that a podcast was a lot of work and I couldn't afford what they really needed to charge me to do everything. And so at the time I went and gave a speech to the entrepreneurship organization at LSU to the EO, I think is what they, a CEO, Collegiate Entrepreneurship Organization at LSU. And I met this college kid named Dylan and he was in there in attendance
and
he's here producing the show today. And so from there, he was like, I love what you're doing. It's pretty cool. I'm not too sure what I want to do, but it sounds like I'm interested in what you do. And I was like, well, come check out the show. I'm actually looking for somebody to help.
Perfect.
So he came on and was a gracious, wonderful intern and then was like, I'm graduating. And I was like, okay, well, now I'll hire you on. And so got a team member on the show. And here we are at the end of 2023. And we've come a long way. It's been a lot of fun. We've learned a lot of lessons over the years. And now we're able to do really cool stuff like, you know, film Outfit of the Days from a Clavey.
Amazing.
We film on site here at Building 5. Like, we're constantly growing and progressing. And, you know, we're still continuing on. We're booked in.
Yeah.
We're booked through February right now, 24.
How far are the bookings out at this point? So through February.
So through February, and we're lining some up for the summer as well. So we're 2 to 3 months is now the average time to get on the show. If you book today, you'll see it in like two. You'll get on the show in 2 or 3 months.
Very cool.
That's kind of where we're at from a timeline perspective. And now we've got people emailing and DMing asking to come on the show. So now we're having to put in a procedure to sift through those requests, because not everybody that asks to be on the show should be on the show. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to get a little bit more legit. The Patty brand is becoming something. We're going into our second annual Patty's Patio Party.
I was so disappointed that I couldn't make the first party, but my husband told me how awesome it was, and I was going to ask you if there is a second party, because I'm going to need that date in advance. I need to get that on my calendar.
It's before Mardi Gras,
okay.
So it's going to be, I think, 2 or 3 weeks before Mardi Gras is the game plan. We're waiting for everybody to get past the holidays, but before they get crazy with Mardi Gras and all that, we're going to have it again. So I've signed on for 10 years of the Patty's Patio Party. I made a commitment to do it for 10 years. So
I like it.
The show's going to be around for a while now, you know.
That's awesome.
Unless something happens to me or some other thing goes sideways, the show should be
Dylan
around.
Dylan quits after this.
Yeah, you know, Dylan's like, hey, man, 200th, I'm out. Yeah, peace. I'll have to figure something out.
Yeah.
So, yes, we're continuing to do stuff like that. And then I've always wanted to build out a brand and not just a product. So Patty G Show being the product, the Patty brand, or the Patty G brand being something bigger than the show itself, is kind of goals and aspirations to get to. So, like, we've done cooking segments with Citigroup Hospitality. We have done tequila tastings with Mestizos and Modestos. We have done community events with Vitalant. You know, we've done stuff with Bourbon Society of Baton Rouge. So I'm trying to expand the horizon of what we do in the community and really start to get more involved with nonprofits, with other businesses, to really keep the mission of promoting Louisiana and Baton Rouge businesses across as many eyeballs as I can. So
the 10th Patty's Patio Party,
yeah,
is that where you're going to announce your candidacy for an election?
No. Politics is something, if you paid attention to the show, is an area we stay out of. And I stay out of it personally, professionally, and with the show. It's just not an area I want to get into.
You're who we need, Patty G.
I think there are,
maybe in 10 years you'll change your mind.
I think there are people that can probably dedicate more time to solving the problems more so than I.
This is the 20-year plan.
Yeah.
20 years.
I don't know. You know, maybe I'll look back on this in 10 years and realize, wow, you totally shut this side of your life out that you're now doing. But I just, as of this moment in my life, I just don't see it.
Once all your kids are grown, and then you can think about it then.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're eyes on the horizon right now. We're going to keep moving along, keep trucking along, and we've got some big things in the works for 24.
Awesome. So, all these episodes you've done, is there any particular episodes that really stick out to you that made a difference in your life, or it made a big difference in their life, and they reached out to you and said, hey, Patty, after your show, I got 10 clients and saved my business?
I mean, the most impactful one was with Pro Limo. You know,
of course. Gosh, what an episode.
Katie G, have you heard of her?
Yeah, have you
heard episode
of
her? Was just phenomenal. Yeah. No, we had a guest early on where they came on. We were a very, very new company. They were called Tatro Toys. I don't know if they're still around.
I actually met them once at, they had a really cool concept and really cool toys at the food hall.
Yep.
There was some sort of a trade show or something there, and the night that we had dinner there, they were there.
Yep. So they came on the show, and we got an email a couple weeks later, and somebody was saying, I'd never heard of Tatro Toys, but because of your show, I went and just bought like their entire catalog or something. And so I was like, okay, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
The fact that somebody watched the show and went and supported that guest is huge. So it wasn't a oh, this company blew up because of it, but it was just for me in the moment realizing the show has a degree of reach. Mm-hmm. It has a degree of impact, no matter how small. Even if it affects one person, that's my metric of success. Like, if one person changes, does something, receives it, and is positively impacted, then the show's a success to me. And so it's not this, you've got to have a X number of sales increase by coming on the show. You got to have X number of increase in impressions or whatever the metric may be. It's just, if the power of one can come into play for the show, then I'm happy, you know, and that really is what drives me. And so, like, we were fortunate enough at the time to, like, I think I ended up donating a table to Tatro Toys. He's like, how can I help? And he was like, that's how, like, we need tables for our products. I'm like, okay, I'll buy a table for you. Like, just now that we're getting more involved with some nonprofits and doing events and such, that's what's going to hit a little bit harder. It's because we're able to help and provide an impact in a little bit of a way, more so than I could individually.
Sure. Yeah, I think that you'll do really well with that. And I just recently went through every page of the giving guide of the Baton Rouge Business Report's giving guide, and was just in awe of how many organizations we have in Baton Rouge that are making a difference, and that there's, and the spirit of Baton Rouge is a very helpful, it's very generous. That's one of my favorite parts about Baton Rouge, is that anytime people are asking for donations, for help with all these events, that people really show up here.
Oh, absolutely. They show up every which way they can. And they're like always asking, how can we help for more? What else
can
we do?
Help? Yeah. Right. How can we help? So what's your favorite part about Baton Rouge?
Oh, gosh. My favorite part about Baton Rouge is how, call it the position I'm in or not, I can get a hold of anybody within one connection or two connections at max. Where we're a little big town, we're so tightly knit, where if I need to find out who this business owner is, or I need to get in touch with them, or I need an XYZ product, I can reach out to a plethora of people and then be instantly connected. That's what I love about it. And I love also that we have this ability where, if you want to do something in Baton Rouge, for the most part, you can come here and do it without an entire just booklet of competition. You know, there may be some competition, but Baton Rouge, for the most part, is ripe for opportunity. It's ripe for people to come in, make a change, and just build a business. You know, we've got incredible tech companies that are being founded here. We've got incredible resources for entrepreneurs. We've got a university that's got a great entrepreneurship program that we're helping in a little bit of a capacity steer that ship and you know, say, hey, we should really focus on the students here, here, and here. You know, we've got Young Entrepreneurs Academy of Baton Rouge. That's a phenomenal organization that I'm helping mentor with them this semester. And just seeing these kids come up with these ideas and be in the classroom and excited to build a business, like, that's what I love about Baton Rouge, that we have this entrepreneurship spirit a little bit, you know, where we can think and create things and then put it into place. And if you try hard enough and you reach out to enough people, you can actually get it done. You know, if you were going to go to a Dallas or a Seattle, you could maybe get a check quicker, but you wouldn't have the hands-on help that you need to get the business growing and going that you do here in Baton Rouge. You know, if you go to Silicon Valley or you go to New York, somebody's going to say, all right, you need $100,000. Here's a check. Go build the business. But then the support is a little lacking there. But in Baton Rouge, you kind of see them. You know, if you go to the grocery store, you're going to run into them. Sure. If you go to a restaurant, you're going to run into them. And you kind of get a little bit of, you know, held to your guns where if they see you, hey, how's the business going? You know, what are you doing? Let's connect. Let's meet up again. Let's touch point and let's see where things are for the company. You are connected to people in a way here that you're just not going to see at a larger city. You know, you could go a week without seeing somebody you know in a Houston area.
Yeah.
Outside of your neighbor. But in Baton Rouge, you can't go a day.
Right.
Without seeing somebody you know.
It's interesting. I was at a party. It was about a year ago. It was welcoming, you know, a big CEO into town. And they wanted him to meet people. and want his family to meet people. And they told us at the party that the reason that they chose Baton Rouge was because of the people. And that if they would have chosen the other job that their family was looking at, which was in Dallas, nobody would have hosted a welcome to town party for them. And they were so just touched by that, and that people were saying, okay, we're going to have a couple get-togethers and introduce you to a bunch of people. And they said, that's where we want to be. We want to be where people want to introduce you to other people and help you in your career and help you get things going. And that was so impressive to them. And all the places they had been and interviewed, they didn't find that personal touch anywhere and that sincerity that they found here in Baton Rouge.
Right.
And I just thought that that was really cool.
Oh, yeah. It's a unique atmosphere, a unique place for sure. That is, we're here. We're planting our roots. We're gonna be here a while.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
So you're living in the city now. Do
yep.
you plan to move your family out and countryfy them at some point and get the land and get your kids push mowing and all that? Is that in the plans?
No.
No.
Not at this time. I love my time out in Sunshine. Still love going back to my parents' house on the farm, and I love seeing my son interact with all the animals and everything. But it's, for right now, that's always going to be a day at Honey and Pops. You know, it's not going to be a day at
so
our
sweet.
House.
And I'm sure they just, so how many grandkids total do your parents have?
They just doubled this year, so they're at 6.
Okay, and are they just loving that? Does your mom want to start homeschooling all of them, start it up again, get the band back together?
I'm sure if given the opportunity, my mom would love to do that, yes. But I don't think it'll happen.
You don't?
No. We probably won't homeschool.
Yeah.
Not for any negative reasons towards homeschooling. It's just my wife and I are going to go in a different way.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited for you. I'm proud of you. I'm excited for everything that the Patty G brand is set to be, and I'm along for the ride, and I'm ready to watch you grow.
Well, thank you.
Congratulations on 200 episodes. Thank you for letting me be a part of it. Always, you know, wanted to play Oprah for the day. I kind of feel like her, sans about $3 billion, but thank you for giving me the opportunity to do something that I really wanted to do.
Well, thank you for doing this. This was a blast. I'm sure we'll get the keys to our free cars on the way out for Oprah,
awesome.
Right?
You yes, know? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kay, for doing this. I really appreciate it. It means a lot. It's a testament of how far the show's come, and we're just getting started.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you. So, y'all, this was 200. We're done for 23. We'll see y'all in 24. Be sure to stay tuned to the social media pages, because we're probably going to have some pretty big announcements coming our way at the end of the year and the start of 2024. We've got a lot in the works. Not much can be discussed at this time, but we're doing some big things here in the community, and I'm very excited for what's going to come next. So thank y'all so much for sticking with us for 200 episodes, and here's to 200 more. So we'll see y'all in the next one.